This is a Cyber Union Talk Show for Tuesday, October 11th, 2011. Organize, network, occupy. Welcome to the show. My name is Steven in Boston, Massachusetts. And with me is...
Walton in Glasgow, Scotland. Stephen, have you had a good week? Anything interesting happening on your side of the water?
Yes, the occupation has arrived. Has come to Boston, Massachusetts, which is quite interesting. I got to say, it's actually a lot of fun. I've been down to the occupation area, which is just down by the main train station in the Boston area, and relatively the center of the financial district, close to it at least. But it's across the street from the Federal Reserve Building as well, which is quite nicely placed. So it's been quite an interesting week. I had my hesitation on whether it was going to work, whether it was going to come here. But when it did, it was quite exciting to see it happen. And it just happened last Friday, which is pretty cool to see.
Well, good news is it seems to be taking off around the world as well. I mean, we've certainly noticed in the UK that this occupation is happening. And in fact, the Coalition of Resistance in Glasgow had a mass meeting video conference with Occupy Wall Street last week. So it is all coming together in quite an encouraging way. There were also two really big trade union marches in the past week in the UK. There was one at the Tory conference in Manchester, and there was an Occupy Manchester contingent who occupied a part of Manchester. And there was also a big march in absolutely terrible weather that I took part in Glasgow.
Nice.
So yeah, but tell us more about the movement and how it's all working and how it's going and everything else that's happening over there.
It's energizing a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of different organizations that I've been familiar with, and they've always been trying to figure out how to mobilize people. And when this happened, they have gotten really excited because it seems to be working. And I think what makes it different than a lot of actions that happened in the past is a lot of them are just marches and they are just one day protests. And this occupation is kind of creating a lot of space that gives people to the chance to return to it and see it and see it grow. And just yesterday, I was actually walking down to the occupied area, not knowing all the schedule of events, and I just happened to see that they were marching. So I joined up with the march, and the Mass Nurses Association had said that they are supporting the occupation, and they were there marching in support. Among other things, they marched down to a couple of buildings that have a large amount of financial companies and were chanting, "We're the 99%, you're the 1%, and tax the rich, tax the rich," which was great to hear. And when I was there, it was actually quite interesting because I looked to the side and I saw this kind of puff of hair that looked really familiar to me, and I couldn't see the face of the person. And when somebody moved away, I was kind of struck. Cornel West was here in the march, and it just kind of surprised me. I was like, why is he here? And he was really cool because he was actually pushing all the press that were trying to talk to him to focus on the march and the protest and not to talk to him. He's just there in support. So it was really cool to see how he was pushing that away. And it's really exciting. It's pretty cool to see it happening. And there are a lot of unions that are coming in line and in support. In fact, one of the IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, if I read the article correctly, they have a LED sign in South Boston that is over the highway, so a lot of cars see it, and they're going to start posting Occupy Boston information up on their LED in solidarity and support, which is really cool. And so it seems to be coming together really strong here in Boston, and I'm going to be going back. I'm actually going to try to work with some of the people working on the tech stuff to see what we can do there. They have some concerns and things like that because I think the Facebook site went down in New York for a bit. Not sure if it's traffic related or not, but, you know, as we saw in the UK a couple months ago, that a lot of Facebook sites were taken down in that were protests and things like that. So it's almost inevitable. So hopefully we could talk about trying to develop some kind of infrastructure to help them in the case that the social medias go down.
What I love about it is just how inspiring it is as a movement when I feel like so much of politics is the politics of despair and no hope, and even on the left, there's a lot of people who feel like they don't really know what to do. And here is a whole movement which is you know expressing the fact that there are lots of us and collectively we can solve the problems. And I like the fact that they don't claim to have the answers. To them, it's not about having a prescription which will solve the problems. It's about trusting the fact that human beings can cooperatively solve the problems, and that what they need to do is have these general assemblies and have these discussions with each other, and that the solutions will flow from that. There isn't a blueprint for social change, but engaging with the issues is the way to bring it about. And I really like that it's a grassroots movement, which some people have called to the Tea Party, compared to the Tea Party, and they've called it the Green Tea Party, which I think is a it's kind of a cool way to put it. And just today, I read they have a manifesto which they've put online, which I like. I like manifestos. I think it's a neglected genre of literature. I think it's really cool because it helps people unite around an idea, and it gives them a common purpose. And certainly in the anti-apartheid struggle, the Freedom Charter was a really, really important binding document. Like most manifestos, it was a bit contradictory and with quite flowery language, but it's really an effective way to unite people. So I'm going to read just a few lines from the Declaration of the Occupation of New York City, if that's okay with you, just because I think it's cool. And
go right ahead.
It's a call to arms for our listeners as well. It goes, we, the New York City General Assembly, occupying Wall Street and Liberty Square, urge you to assert your power. Exercise your right to peaceable assembly. Occupy public space. Create a process to address the problems we face and generate solutions accessible to everyone. To all communities that take action and form groups in the spirit of direct democracy, we offer support, documentation, and all of the resources at our disposal. Join us and make your voices heard. So I think it's cool because it's really, really practical. And in fact, the language sounds a little bit like the kind of documentation you get around free and open source software, you know?
Yeah,
It's got that feel to it, and it's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah, no, same here. I think there's a lot of interesting things that the way they phrase things and everything, that's really good. And like a lot of movements of any sort, they're going to be making mistakes. And the good thing is that there's a lot of people are giving them a lot of leeway on correcting it, and they seem to be doing a good job on that too. So there's not too many people who are getting, doesn't seem at least so far, and I can't speak for what's going to happen, but, you know, not too many people are being marginalized or anything like that. They've been getting a lot of support, people walking in off the streets and just asking questions, and a lot of activist organizations that I've been part of have been giving in a lot of helpful tools, popular education type tools that are really helpful in emphasizing the points of what they're trying to raise and the concerns. And it's really cool. I mean, it's really funny to see the section of the city where there are all these tents popped up out of nowhere, and they seem to be keeping really good order and keeping the peace in the area, not letting things get out of hand or anything like that, which is really good. Giving them a lot of credibility to the public, and the public have to, they can't not see it because it's in the central area of commuters, so everybody's walking by it when they go to and from work. So it's constantly starting to get picked up on the news on a regular basis.
Great.
Though the mainstream media has been doing a poor job on how they cover it, but you know, it's the fact that it's the media is actually there, which is really cool to see.
This is what democracy looks like, eh?
Yeah, I've heard that enough times in the last week, which is great to hear. It's nice to hear it on the streets, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one positive to the terrible financial and political situation we find, is this this upsurge in activism. And I was commuting to work by train the other day, and just in my carriage on the train, I recognized three people from different demonstrations that I've been on in the past few months. And I thought, you know, that's really cool, because these are all strangers. They're not people I know, but suddenly there's faces that I recognize from demonstrations. And it makes you feel something is coalescing, something's coming together. People are reaching out to each other. People are networking. And yeah, it kind of encourages me in what we're trying to do as well, which is do some of the tech support and some of the thinking about technology that can help to facilitate that progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. And actually, I was going to say, not to jump too much, but our site has gotten some quite interesting visitors in the last week.
Yeah,
too.
I saw that, yeah. The Union Busters have noticed us.
Yeah, which was quite amazing. And of all things, they went after that same popular article about the swarm theory, which was really interesting that they kind of picked on that too. So it's going to be really interesting to see why, and I got to find out what this organization's all about in the first place. But I think we're going to have to revisit this, because there's a lot of anti-union organizations in the States, and a lot of them are online and putting out a lot of false information. I think we should probably talk about it at some point.
I think so, yeah. They certainly seem worried about the idea about swarm organizing. Based on what they said in that article. So if the Union Busters are worried about it, then hopefully it's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if we have some new listeners that are from the right wing and anti-union, welcome aboard. You may not like what we say, but, you know, we speak for justice anyhow, so. anyhow, going kind of jumping from there, if there's any tech news that you want to go over this week?
Yeah, let's do tech news, and let's not do an iPhone 4S review.
I have a nice little thing of what that S stands for, by the way.
The 4S.
You know, because they're 4Ss. It's the same shit selling for suckers.
Yeah. I hope you've not alienated half our listeners there, Stephen, but I'm not a fan of iPhones either. And I guess this is also not a lament for Steve Jobs in particular, is it?
I suppose not. I'm going to recuse my comments at this point, so but you know, I mean, he's an interesting person when he's here, but I don't know whether what he did was monumental, which is how the press seems to be covering it here in the States, so that's my thought.
Actually, what I thought was worth talking about is Facebook again, because a lot of people use it, and they have something new called Open Graph, which essentially makes it a lot easier for people to develop Facebook applications. But why it's important is the privacy implications of that. And we've spoken about Facebook and privacy before, and we've spoken about how, you know, nothing that you put on Facebook is ever completely private and all that kind of thing. The one thing which people probably don't realize is that Facebook is now able to track what you do even when you're not on Facebook. Any page which has a Facebook like button on it, if you're using the same browser that you use to log into Facebook, it sends that information to Facebook saying that you've just clicked on this page, you've just clicked on that, whether or not you've actually clicked like on that page. And I don't like that. I don't like the idea that Facebook knows all the websites that I visited, because we know that they harvest that data and they sell it to advertisers and goodness knows what else they do with it. So they call it frictionless sharing. That is, you know, you don't have to consciously share. It's just automatically shared. I call it total surveillance.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much what it is. And I think Google does the same. I don't think it's just really Facebook. I haven't looked into it, but I would imagine that Google probably collects similar information about your habits. So I think we need to investigate that one as well.
And, yeah.
Start toggling that Torbat.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. It wouldn't surprise me. It's a very concerning issue because, like, especially with Facebook, I mean, it's, even with the Occupy Together and everything that's going on across the country, there's a lot of Facebook reliance on it. And, you know, I'm always cautious of what the government knows about me, but I'm much more cautious about what companies know about me and how they could use that information. I mean, these actions that are going on are kind of in direct confrontation to companies like Facebook, because they make a tremendous amount of money off of Wall Street, and they in one way or another play to the whole crises that we're in. And you know, they have an interest into making sure that things like that don't get out. So I could see that they could be wanting to see where their followers are going and trying to pick and figure it out. Or if the federal government wanted to say, hey, could you give us that data to figure out if they went to some, you know, radical website or something like that and started making a witch trial out of the whole situation. Mm-hmm. So that's a big issue. I think, you know, it's really important, I think, to really emphasize that, you know, and I know a lot of our listeners don't use Facebook that much, but even for the ones that do and the ones that know people who do, trying to get them off of it, because it's just, I mean, it's very popular. We know that. But there's a lot of bad things that they can do with it that's almost much worse than what a government could do with your information. But, you know, depending on the type of government, of course, too. But, and if Google's going to start doing this, it wouldn't surprise me if they do. It does give us the idea of what, you know, we already got rid of Skype. So what do
we're going to have to make
another
try
to get rid of Google next? I mean, although this will all be resolved when we finally get our own server space and are able to start playing with a lot of the tools that we've been talking about, too. So putting a lot of more to practice of what we've been preaching.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a guest today, and in fact, I think one of the things he's going to talk about is Facebook and union organizing, so we can revisit some of this stuff a little bit later on. It's Orson. Orson, are you there?
Yes, Walton, I'm here.
Okay. Ons kan lekker saam praat in Afrikaans. Ek is Suid-Afrikaans, ek kan Afrikaans praat, en jy is in Nederland, so ons kan saam Nederlands praat, en Steven kan niks verstaan.
Dat is echt gezellig om hier met jullie te zijn en in deze mooie regende avondje.
No, wait a second. You did not tell me I had to learn a new language, and what language was that anyhow?
I was just giving Orsan some advance warning about the fact that you have a habit of distro hopping, and that this has a destructive effect on our ability to record shows sometimes.
This is true. This is true. I guess the secret is out, isn't it now, in all languages? Well, two languages, for that matter.
sorry, Stephen, but it was only good things about it. You can trust me.
Well, thank you, Orson.
Orson has been a long-time listener of our show, and he's commented a few times, and he actually commented recently, which is why we invited him on the show. So, Orson, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and some of the things you've been involved in?
Okay. Yeah, I'm originally from Turkey, and I live in the Netherlands for almost 7 years. And in Turkey, I work as a union expert, but actually only after moving to the Netherlands I become one of it, a real union expert, because of the crisis merging in Europe, actually globally, and it's rising right wing sentiments in the Netherlands and also Europe wide, actually gave me a pretty good chance to observe the daily problems of flexibilized and have to work through agencies, private agencies, immigrant workers, and the young workers, their routine discrimination, intimidation, and living conditions under constant uncertainty. I had to experience all this from the first hand, so this process actually made me a union expert, labor expert in my eyes. And during this time, I searched for possibilities to do union work in the Netherlands, involved with unions. And I met with an international labor network called TAI, which means Transnational Information Exchange. It's a network of independent autonomous nodes of labor organizations.
Oh, fantastic. Nodes. We like nodes, don't we?
Yes, we do.
These nodes are outside the unions mostly, but work with trade unions in Latin America, in East Europe, and all of them focuses on empowerment of workers at the workplace, and for that matter, they use exchange and training mainly. And specifically, I helped them. I helped TAI, Dutch node of the network, in building and running several exchange projects that are linked to Turkey specifically.
Okay.
And yeah, besides my involvement with TAI, I spent most of my time actually on two projects that I initiated myself at the end of 2010.
Okay.
And these they flamed up with discussion took place on Union Book with people like Peter Ol Jones from New Unionism Network and Peter Waterman, which is known labor activist and a theorist.
In fact, if I can mention Peter Waterman here, he's actually quite important because he's probably the first industrial relations theorist and academic to ever conceptualize the idea of what's become cyber unionism. He wrote a paper in 1992 called Labor Communication by Computer Towards a New International, or Towards a Fifth International, I think he called it. And that was the first theoretical piece, I think, ever written about using information technology for union organizing. And he also linked it to the social movement unionism that we spoke about a few shows ago, and was essentially arguing that technology can facilitate a global social movement unionism. And that's still an idea that inspires us and that we're fairly committed to working with. So I think his ideas are actually quite important to the overall project we're involved in.
Yes, he inspired me and my projects too. Actually, I was lucky in this sense because he lives in Den Haag. I have a chance to go visit him and talk to him sometime. And actually, he's right at the moment. He's in South Africa, involved in a labor global labor university conference, which is
in Johannesburg just now. Yeah.
Yes, that's very good initiative actually, but it's another story. What I wanted to say is my own concept, blog project, is also inspired by his theorization and writings,
mm-hmm.
which is called social network unionism.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, with this project, I'm trying to develop a new concept,
okay,
which comes closer, very closer to the social movement unionism,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it's more about trade unions and labor organizations or workers self-organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Adopting social network principles,
okay,
and online the new online tools which popped up after 2004 and
mm-hmm.
spread it globally, and in their internal, I mean, using and the workers organizations adopting and internalizing these relations, these principles in their relationships with
mm-hmm.
Be it with their members, rank and file, other organizations or movements or networks, you name it, and I try to actually trace and map specific
okay.
experiments like your blog, your project. So what I'm interested in here is just to explain or foresee how would this new infrastructure, technical, but this new change,
mm-hmm.
if you will, in productive forces,
mm-hmm.
bring about maybe someone calls hyper-empowered labor class movements.
Uh-huh.
It was this possibility I'm trying to trace.
Yeah, I think
we're
interested in that as well because of the whole idea that technology facilitates peer production quite easily. We can create our own movements, but we can also create our own products, our own wealth. We can you know step outside of the old mode of production and actually facilitate a new way of producing wealth, and it's something we're also quite interested in. So it's interesting to hear that you're thinking along the same lines.
Definitely, yes. It started as an experiment, but it is really now it's a mature podcast, established podcast, so to speak.
I don't know if I would consider myself very mature, but
me neither. I certainly do not act my age.
it is going really fast. So I'm trying to don't actually one of the impacts regarding to the changes in this productive forces or technology, if you want. Starting with the global spread of the internet and mobile phones,
mm-hmm.
and web 2.0 and the linking of all these two together, actually, what I think is going to produce a new type of worker self-organizations. That is
okay.
That is inevitable. I mean, mm-hmm. like maybe telephone and telegraph and printed media before made an impact on all sort of organizations. This is
mm-hmm.
also happening now.
Okay.
The other project I'm busy with is actually ideal type experiment of this social network union. It's,
mm-hmm.
It is called Gaia.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds a little bit esoteric, but actually it stands for Global Alliance for Immediate Alteration. It's just it's a short for this,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
and it is referring to as a name. It's referring to the unity of movements and as well as nature and other struggle fields, because it is actually a concept developed, it refers to a theory developed by someone called Locke, and it is about the unity of a planet as a one organism, which is remarkable for social movements trying to build an alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So it stems from there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an ideal type experiment. So it's an experiment trying to be transnational in scope and
mm-hmm.
adopt peer-to-peer networking principle as an external and internal relationship dynamic.
We'll put a link in our show notes to both of those projects, and we'll encourage listeners to go and have a look and see what you think. I think it's an interesting idea to link the nodes of self-organization of workers into James Lovelock's Gaia theory, because we've done similar things where we've linked human organizing to the natural world when we've spoken about swarm theory and nodes and rhizomes and all those things before. So I think there is some
mm-hmm.
kind of mileage in that way of thinking.
Definitely. I have the same feeling, and with that feelings I'm following all the episodes and being inspired by the articles and the podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Producing, what is remarkable in this this process. I mean, in my search, I'm not expert in open source softwares in general, mm-hmm. in actually technological tools themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in this search for labor movement or trade union movement, for a new type of or revitalization or renewal, mm-hmm. this boils down to or coming across with the problem of having the right softwares and right strategy and the experience or vision or openness to the idea, I mean, or maybe the knowledge of actually exactly what your project mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. contributing. That's what comes to that point. With a specific question, I wanted to talk to you and maybe collectively brainstorm because of the existence of Facebook and Twitter and their coverage of people. I mean, mm-hmm. when you think of Facebook having, I don't know if the numbers are reliable, but
750 million at the latest estimate.
I mean, yeah. Oh, yes, you can think this as a metrics owning the people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are being traced. Facebook knows what you do and what you don't do. More importantly, but these are the among these people. There are here. I wanted to come up with this example from Turkey, mm-hmm. which shows the problem, a concrete problem, in my own project and in general for the labor's change, mm-hmm. labor mm-hmm. movement's change. For example, the repressive conditions in Turkey makes it very difficult for progressive unions to break down the dominance of yellow unions, which okay. means union actually, instead of representing or protecting its members' interest, works together with management and state mm-hmm. against its members. Mm-hmm. Mm. It's very difficult. There are, like in many other countries, there are certain tricks, certain gaps in law, certain structure blocks people to get organized and become a member of a progressive union.
Well, I was going to say, Orson, it sounds very interesting, and I mean, Facebook definitely is something. It throws up a red flag, and well, not the right red flag, but it throws up a flag in the sense that that there's a concern because, you know, Facebook, if anybody complains about some group on there, that whole account could get taken down, which you've talked about before. But it also, in a state where it's repressive, it also means that any information that's up there is really seen by management as a concern too. And it seems that there's some free and open source software that I can think of that would be useful in a lot of these cases. I mean, whether it's Diaspora or StatusNet, which seems to be the kind of go-to ones that I always fall back on, but it seems that there may be more needed. And it's, I mean, I know, you know, we're relatively new to the free and open source world, and we've seen a lot of things that are very strategic and can be utilized in campaigns for unions and social movements. And we also see a lot of people within the free and open source software that seek to help people within the labor and social movements. And it seems to me, at least, that this might be kind of going over some of the goals of what your organizations that you're working with, and also in this labor issue in Turkey. There's a lot of discussion that could follow through after even this show. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, I'm going to put it out there only because we just started it this week. Is we opened up a cyber unions channel on an IRC account on OFTC.net, and I want to just say that we could use that space at least for discussions and trying to see if there are any people out there that are familiar with a lot of free and open source software after looking at some of the sites that Orson's referring to that'll be in the show notes to kind of contribute and see if they have suggestions and ideas just so we can help each other. But it seems like there's some concerns on that. I mean, social networks are good. It's just a matter that they're on Facebook, so they don't have complete control over their information. And, you know, if a repressive government calls up Facebook and says, hey, take this account down, you know, it's probably going to happen, and mm-hmm. it won't be open to the public on what actually happened. But we know that corporations will fall to the power of companies or to governments when it's a matter that their, you know, interests are expressed or whatever against, for that matter. I'm not.
Yeah, I think the IRC mm-hmm. channel is a good shot because in the spirit of Occupy Wall Street and trying to solve problems together, we certainly don't have the answers to all of this. But what we need to do is is kind of ask these questions publicly and try and figure the stuff out collectively.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it.
These are great ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one way of doing it. I think, I mean, even just the general software that is out there and trying to look at it, there are a number of different activist sites that have been using some software, but not all of it is necessarily free and open source, which doesn't mean that it's not good, but it's sometimes limiting on what it can connect to. And I think that's a bigger concern too, of trying to figure out how to connect the software that you want to use to broader networks, so it's not creating something completely separate that can't connect to Twitter or Facebook or something like that. But you do have to, nowadays, I think you have to wait for, you have to anticipate that moment of the popular ones of Twitter and Facebook will eventually be taken down or disrupted some way. And you know, going with the same idea of nodes again, which is becoming now a famous phrase on my part.
It's becoming a leitmotif for the podcast, Steven.
There we go. but I think that's what we need to be encouraging, is like anybody who's using social networks and things like that needs to start thinking about how to take control of that, so it's in their hands and not in the hands of a company that may or may not support it and could take it down. And I think even amongst that, what we develop our sites on, I think is really important to make sure that we're still trying to connect it with other communities that are going to be helpful, instead of communities that are going to be like, well, you're going to have to pay for that if you want that feature, or something like that. Not to say that all free and open source software isn't free for that matter, but if we want to, I don't know if we want to kind of expand on that. I don't know if you have anything more to say there, Walton or Orson.
No, I think that's a good place to leave it. I think, you know, clearly this discussion, both the stuff about software and also about some of the theoretical underpinnings of what we're trying to do, is developing and growing. And we're also finding more people who are thinking along similar lines. So I think we need to keep the lines of communication open and keep building on these ideas. But I think for now, that's all I'd like to say about this.
Orson, I want to say thank you very much for bringing this to really our attention and actually coming on the show to talk about it, because I think this is kind of bringing us to another step within our whole idea of the show and the site that we're trying to put together, is trying to not only know that we don't have all the answers, but also trying to figure out how we can build that community to try to find the answers that are going to be very helpful to all of our projects. And thank you again for coming on.
Thank you very much. I should say, as a last thing, this is a very exciting idea, given that these union busting guys following these kind of discussions, this IRC channel idea can be a great place for an exchange on these kind of issues where you cannot be traced and your strategies are followed by the enemy. But I think that can be a really good start for solving this specific question. I think all like-minded people are heading towards. Thank you for having me. This was great joy.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Orson.
Thanks, Mike.
Steven?
Yes.
Should we just go over a bit of feedback before wrapping up the show?
Help will come whenever it's needed. Cheer, my comrades, cheer.
Yeah, that sounds good. What do you got?
I've got a bunch of stuff. Actually, the first thing is I realized that I accused you once again of distro hopping. But I'm the guilty party this time around, because, as regular listeners will know, I've been running Linux Mint Debian Edition for the past forever, since the whole time we've been doing the show. But ever since the upgrade to the version 3 of the Linux kernel, Debian no longer supports my wireless card, and I cannot get it to work. And I know you were having the same trouble when you're running Triskel and all of that. So today I took the wild jump into the wonderful world of Arch, and I installed Chakra Linux, which is based on Arch.
That is quite the leap, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a leap. I wanted something a bit different, and it's Arch Linux, which is a kind of purist's Linux with a KDE sort of user interface on top of it, and it's relatively easy to use for a newcomer as well. It's not kind of pure Arch for mental command line ninjas only. It is relatively easy to use. I must say it's a beautiful system. It really looks nice and clean. It's very fast. It works very well. However, I haven't yet figured out how to install the Google Talk plugin that we need to record a three-way show in when we have guests on the show. So I've had to actually record this show on a netbook running Ubuntu. So half an hour before we started recording the show, I was on the IRC channel desperately asking for help to install the plugin. Because I thought it was going to be me this time that kept everyone waiting, but fortunately the netbook came to my assistance.
Well, if I know it's going to lead to you possibly being the one that was going to hold us up, I should have just disregarded and just waited and just say, Walton, where are you? So the distro hopping has struck you.
Yeah, now, I'm infected as well.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do. Well, just watch out, you know, just try not to think about the next one out there. So, but glad to see that you are taking leaps, and quite a large one at that.
Yeah, no, it's just fun. I've been on Debian for 6 years now, so interesting to have a change. Though I've only been on this system for 2 hours now, so, you know, it's early days, shall we say. The other feedback is just, we had a comment from Plot Tracer of Second Life Left Unity, which is one of the left-wing umbrella organizations in the virtual world Second Life, saying that they're having solidarity protests and occupations in Second Life for the Occupy movement, which was cool to hear. Also, we got a mention in the latest edition of Labour Research, which is there's a labour service organisation in the UK called the Labour Research Department, who do information and research on pay bargaining and so on, and they provide that as a service to trade unions. And they also have this monthly magazine called Labour Research, and they wrote a really in-depth and I think quite intelligent article about trade union use of technology. And Cyber Unions is one of the very few sites that they recommended readers actually visit to find out more about the subject. So that was pleasing to get a bit of recognition. Mm-hmm. And I also thought it would be cool to do a shout out to our visitors from TUC Education, because the Trade Union Education Department at Stoke College in Glasgow has been using Cyber Unions as a teaching resource for one of the modules that they've been using, and I've seen visitors coming in from TUC Education.
That's great.
So, yeah,
that's really
fantastic.
Great to hear.
So, you know, welcome, and it's good to have you aboard, and we hope to see more of you in future.
Yeah, definitely. That's great to hear. It's really interesting to see the larger unions actually seeing our site and giving it out to a lot of their staff and members. Mm-hmm. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. Do you have any feedback?
Actually, not too much on my side, to be honest. I think it's gonna be your feedback heavy this week, and
okay.
I'll try to pick it up on the rebound next week.
That's fine. I'll take a week off.
Oh, there we go.
I won't do anything interesting for a week.
I'll try to be boring. No, I can't be boring this week. Okay, I'll try not to be boring this week and bring some good feedback coming from our listeners and everybody else. So,
okay.
Other than that, yeah, I'm just going to give a following shout out to Occupy Boston and Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Together. And I'm going to get down to Occupy tonight myself. So hopefully be able to report back on that next week and see where it goes.
All right. And join the movement, everyone.
Bye.